your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Just win.
Your team
just
every
win.
Day.
Just win.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously. His face is weather-beaten. He wears a hooded sash, with a silver hat about his head, and a bristling black mustache. He growls as he storms the country, a villain big and bold. And the trees all shake and quiver and quake as he robs them of their gold. The autumn wind is a raider, pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
What's up, Raider Nation? Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Raiders podcast. It is Tuesday, August 11th, 2020. Got your boy Q here with you as always. You know you can always find me on Twitter, as many of you do, at your boy Q254. That's at your boy Q254. Also, if you want to chime in, talk about whatever subject I'm talking about or something that's on your mind, you can at any time, 707-654-4693. Coming up on today's show, it's going to be a very defensive show. And what I mean by that, well, in segment number three, you're going to get those calls and texts straight off that Locked On Raider podcast voicemail line. Again, the number is 707-654-4693. But then in segment number two, I'm going to talk about the defense. It's been a subject of conversation going on a lot around the Raiders. When I was on the Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio 920 on Monday, I had a very long discussion about the Raiders defense. We even had Ted Nguyen from The Athletic on talking about Paul Gunn. Gunther's defensive scheme and everything. And there's a lot of players, and not a lot of players, a lot of people who don't believe that Paul Gunther has enough of the players, of the weapons, to actually put together a really good defense. And I believe that in 2019, but I don't believe that in 2020. So in segment number two, we're going to talk all things defense, and I'm going to basically blueprint, lay it out there on the table of why the Raiders have enough weapons and who are going to be the key players on that defensive side of the ball, and say, why not? Ask the question, why not? Why don't the Raiders have enough on the defensive side of the ball to make their defense at least top 15? I'm not asking for top three. I'm not asking for top five. I'm just saying if you're a top 15 defense, you're going to win a lot more games than seven. You're going to be in a lot more games and have an opportunity to win a lot more games. So we'll talk all things defense in segment number two. Here in segment number one, I'll give you the news and the notes of the day as I always do. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. On Monday, free agent tight end Jason Witten and free agent linebacker Nick Kwiatkowski met with the media. And so I'm not going to play any clips from what Jason Witten had to say. If you want to go check that out, you can on Raiders.com. He basically talked a lot about leadership and what he's bringing to the table and why he, you know, agreed to sign with the Raiders and what he brings to the table. Again, a lot of that has to do with leadership. And if you do want to check that out, that's all good. You can go to Raiders.com and check it out in its entirety, as you can with any kind of press conference that the Raiders have. They always have it up there. And you can hear the whole thing. But I do, since today is a very defensive podcast, I do want to bring to the table what linebacker Nick Kwiatkowski had to say to the media. Some things that stood out to me in a major way. I want to bring those to you right now. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. The first thing that was said, one of the first things that was said, was the question was posed to Nick Kwiatkowski about his initial thoughts on defensive coordinator Paul Gunther's, his defensive scheme, what he's seeing from it early on.
Mitch Preston's great. I said it back in spring. You know, I love the way he coaches, the scheme, everything's great. Now that I get to actually meet him in person, you know, be on the field with him. He's been great. Kind of putting a lot of things in a short amount of time. I mean, barring the situation so far, I mean, it's been awesome.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think Nick Kwiatkowski is a very underrated signing that the Raiders did in free agency. And look, this is a linebacker talking about Paul Gunther's defensive scheme. And Paul Gunther is a linebacker's coach at heart. So this is a guy that he should definitely get along with. This is something that Nick Kwiatkowski should be able to see his concepts and understand what he wants to do and be able to execute it. And look, Nick Kwiatkowski is the guy that is wearing the green dot this year. So he's going to be the quarterback of the defense. So another question that was asked to Nick Kwiatkowski was, hey, what about your running mate? What about Corey Littleton, the guy that they also brought in as a free agent from the Rams? What are your thoughts playing side by side with linebacker Corey Littleton?
Initial impression, I mean, excited to play with him. I got a chance to play against him last year, and, you know, just seeing him now, I mean, he's athletic. Just an all-around linebacker. He does a lot of things well, and I'm excited to play next to him.
And those two guys together should be very big keys to the Raiders' defense. Corey Littleton obviously had the athleticism to go sideline to sideline, be able to drop in coverage. Nick Kwiatkowski could do a lot of good things as well. So very excited about just the linebacking core and what they bring to the table, because anyone knows who's been watching the Raiders for long enough, anyone knows who's a member of Raider Nation, the Raiders haven't had anything at that linebacking core for so stinking long, ever since the law firm of Morrison and Thomas Howard, and of course, rest in peace to Thomas Howard, but the linebacking core has been a struggle. And so if that initial part of the team can get fixed and rectified this season, that defense is going to be that much better. And everyone remembers, including myself, how much the defense struggled after Vontaze Burfict went out in 2019, even though he was a guy that I never expected them to be able to rely on throughout the whole course of the season because, well, he's just never available. He was only available 4 games, but you saw the big hole that was left in the defense once he went down. So now with the addition of Corey Littleton, with the addition of Nick Kwiatkowski, things should be better, at least for the linebacking core. And, oh, don't forget Javon White, the undrafted free agent out of UNLV. And don't forget about Tanner Muse, the third-round pick out of Clemson. Those guys are going to have a say in things as well. Now, moving on, another question that he was asked was how, and when I say he, I'm talking about Nick Kwiatkowski, how can he get the defense prepared right now? How to get the players all on the same page? That's going to be a tough job just because, well, there's so many new parts, including himself and Corey Littleton, on that defensive side of the ball. So how does he, with the green dot on the back of his helmet, how does he get these guys all on the same page?
The biggest thing for me is communication. Getting people lined up, making sure everyone's on the same page. Like I said before, I mean, we did a great job in spring. Guys have been in the playbook. So once we got on the field, I mean, it's just a matter of getting things together. And, I mean, everything has been smooth so far.
And he said the C word right there, communication. How big is communication? If you remember Raider Nation, even go back to when the Raiders acquired Navarro Bowman. Remember they acquired him in the middle of the season from the San Francisco 49ers? That was one of the first things that he said, was that the Raiders don't communicate well on defense. So when Nick Kwiatkowski says communication to him is the biggest key, he is absolutely spot on. He's got to be able to bark out what they need to do. They've got to be able to understand what they're supposed to do. And then on the fly, got to be able to adjust just in case the offense, or when the offense does adjust, they've got to be able to adjust as well. So that goes to communication. That goes to the center of the field, which is the linebacker, the middle linebacker, what Nick Kwiatkowski's going to be. He's got to let, you know, the corners know what they're going to do. Has to let the safeties know what they're going to do. He's got to be the quarterback, and he's got to be the king of the communication. Now, I've heard from Vinny Bonsignor, who follows us on Raider Nation Radio on In the Huddle. He said that Corey Littleton's not a big vocal guy. Well, the good thing for the Raiders is Corey Littleton doesn't need to be a big vocal guy, but Nick Kwiatkowski has to be. He's had some experience with that in Chicago. He's done a really good job when he's had to have the green dot on his helmet, so this is something that he should be okay with sliding into this position. Now moving on, Nick was asked a question about, well, and it's a question that has been asked to Raiders and Raider linebackers for the longest. What is the biggest deal with covering the running backs out of the backfield? What is the biggest deal with covering the tight end position? So how does he see this unit solving that lifelong issue that the Raiders have had covering running backs and covering the tight end position?
Initially, I mean, just understanding, you know, who we're playing, you know, what coverage we're in, knowing your help is. I mean, for us right now, I mean, it's early, trying to get the defense down, but that's something we kind of talk about every day, and we're going to work on moving forward.
Again, that goes back to communication. You know who they're playing. Are you playing the Chiefs? Are you playing Clyde Edwards-Helaire? Is he in the backfield? Are you playing Travis Kelce? Is Tyreek Hill? I mean, you know, just you got to know. And in the AFC West, you got Noah Fant. You got Travis Kelce. You've got dogs. You know, you got Hunter Henry in L.A. There's a lot of different big-time players, but you got to know the personnel. You got to recognize who's in the game and who can beat you and how they could beat you. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be a nasty twist that Kansas City is going to throw in that backfield. He's a dude that can run between the tackles. He's a guy who can run on the outside, and he's also a guy that can catch the ball out of the backfield. So he's a three-headed monster, and so the tight ends are, and the linebackers are going to have to really be aware of not only the tight ends that have been burning the Raiders for years, but also the running backs in this division, because that's going to just be another element and another weapon used against them. So they definitely got to be all on the same page, but it definitely goes back to communication again. Final quote from Nick Kwiatkowski is just about the defense in general. What do they have to do? How difficult is it going to be to get on the same page and help this team out, be a well-rounded team? You know, what do they have to do to make that happen?
I would say just making the most of our time. You know, we're finally here. We're finally together. So just, you know, taking each day and, you know, getting the most out of it. I felt like we did a very good job during Zoom, so over the spring. So coming in, I don't feel like there was many hiccups. I mean, we hit the ground rolling. I mean, it's been a good first week, first couple of days.
Making the most of their time is going to be crucial because they don't have a lot of time. They haven't had a lot of time. The OTAs, the rookie minicamp, the offseason workouts have not been there. Only thing that they've been doing is virtual workouts, and I'm sorry, you cannot get on the same page by way of the computer. You just can't. You got to have the time on the grass. That's the only way that you're going to learn. It's the only way you're going to make mistakes and learn from those mistakes. You can't do it by way of video. Now, you can get concepts. You can get ideas. You can kind of get an understanding. But until you actually get out there and execute it, you're not going to be able to be on the same page. So they've got to take advantage of the time that they do. They're going to have 14 padded practices. That's it. Throughout training camp, as they prepare for the Carolina Panthers first week of the season, they're only going to have 14 padded practices. That's just about nothing. Their first padded practice will be August 17th. That's John Gruden's birthday. That's the first day they actually have padded practices. So you know that they're not going to get a whole lot of time to get the scheme down, to get the understanding down. While they're out there, they've got to take advantage of it. They can't sit there and go half speed. They can't go half-assed. They're going to have to go 100% the whole time while they're allowed to go 100% the whole time. And please believe that's not a long time to be able to do that. So that's going to be something that you definitely have to pay attention to. A couple more notes real quick I have for segment number one of today's Locked On Raiders podcast. Before we get into segment two and talk about the defense in greater length, this has to do with Allegiant Stadium. The Mountain West, as we all pay attention to college football and if it's going to be played in 2020, it looks like it might not be. It looks like a lot of conferences are not going to. The Mountain West has postponed their 2020 season. So what does that mean? That means that UNLV will not be the first team to play in Allegiant Stadium because they are pushing it back. They're not going to play football in the fall. So the hope for the Mountain West is that they're going to reschedule their fall sports in the spring. But right now, it's still unknown. So as of right now, the first football game that will be played in Allegiant Stadium is by the Raiders, by the home team. It is their stadium. The first game that will be played is that Monday Night Football game, Week 2 versus the New Orleans Saints. And my final piece of news and notes for segment number one of today's Locked On Raiders podcast has to do with Yannick Ngakoue. Of course, he's a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars. He's holding the franchise tag. He has not signed his franchise tag, but something kind of interesting happened on Monday with him. He actually parted ways with his agent. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because this is the second time he's parted ways with his agent. So he's right now currently in the 5-day waiting period before he's allowed to hire a new representation. But this will be his third agent. And look, he's supposed to make $17.78 million on the 1-year franchise tag. He does not want to play in Jacksonville. He desperately wants to get traded. They have not made a trade for him yet. He's still out there and again has not signed the franchise tag. But clearly he's upset with his representation because he's fired him now not once but twice, and when he does hire a new agent it will be the third one. So see what happens. I don't know. I believe Yannick Ngakoue is gonna have to suck it up, sign the franchise tag, and eventually play for Jacksonville for at least one more year before they decide to what they want to do with him. And look, they can franchise tag him again, but he's clearly upset with his representation. He wanted out of Jacksonville. He was hoping he'd have been done and been out of there by now, but he's not. So fired his agent and is looking for a third, but he still has to wait 5 days before he's able to hire another one. Coming up in segment number two, the defense. Let's talk all things defense. A lot of folks out there thinks that Paul Gunther does not have the weapons that he needs to put together a really good defense, at least a top 15 defense in 2020. I don't believe the same, and I'll tell you why next here on the Locked On Raiders podcast.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Here we are, Raider Nation, segment number two of today's Locked On Raiders podcast on this defensive side of the ball type podcast today. Again, Tuesday, August 11th, 2020, and want to talk about the defense, want to talk about the weapons that Paul Gunther now has. And I've been saying this since the season ended in 2019 that I felt this offseason the Raiders were going to dedicate themselves to improving the defense just like they improved and they dedicated themselves to improving the offensive line the year before. You know, after 2018, they made sure that they went out and got enough guys on the offensive line that can help Tom Cable out. And I thought Tom Cable was on the hot seat going into 2019, and the offensive line proved to be a real deal. It proved to be a really good part of the team. Obviously, Trent Brown, Richie Incognito, and the depth that they had behind him. Gabe Jackson missed a few games, and still they were able to rock and roll and be on the same page and look really good. So I said going into 2020, going into the offseason after 2019, I thought the Raiders were going to dedicate themselves to improving the defense. They did it in free agency, and they did it in the draft. And so now you kind of look at a unit that came in 29th. You look at a unit that gave up 26 points a game, and you say, Can it be improved? Why shouldn't it be improved? There's a lot of weapons on this on that side of the ball. Now, there's some guys that, you know, could be added still. There's some guys that could have been added that can't be added now. But either way, there's some players on that side of the ball, enough players, in my opinion, to really drastically improve the Raiders' defense. And that's what's going to have to happen. I believe that the offense is going to be really good. I think they'll come out of the gates and be really good. And they may have to carry the defense a little bit just because it's hard to gel in 14 padded practices. But the guys are there, man. The dudes are there. So I hear a lot of people, and we actually had this conversation on Raider Nation Radio 920. And every day, Scott Gulbranson, he puts out like a cited debate. And a lot of people, he put out the debate. A lot of people said, no, there's not enough weapons to have a really good team. And I don't understand what you're looking at. I don't understand what roster you're looking at. First of all, you look at the defense led by Max Crosby, who had 10 sacks his rookie year, wasn't even a full-time starter all season long, and you have to feel like he's going to improve, right? At the very least, he's going to be the same dude, and that doesn't mean he's necessarily going to get 10 sacks. He's going to get more attention. He's not going to surprise anybody, but at the same time, he's going to be disruptive. Sometimes your numbers drop. Maybe he'll only get 8 sacks. Maybe he'll get 7.5. But that means that someone else is probably cleaning up when he's getting double teamed or triple teamed. So I don't expect Max Crosby to take a step back. And I know that currently he's out on the COVID-19 IR list, but I believe he'll come back soon. And from everything that I've been hearing, sounds like he's asymptomatic. So that's a positive. And I think he'll be out there and he'll be ready to rock and roll. And in Paul Gunther's scheme, he already knows the scheme. So it's not like, okay, he's far behind. He's not a rookie. So you would expect at the very least Max Crosby to stay the same, right? Well, continuing on the defensive line, you bring in Carl Nassib from Tampa Bay. He's got 18 career sacks. He had 6 sacks in 14 games in 2019. He's been in the league for a few years, you know, but he's a constant. You saw the money that the Raiders gave him. He's a guy who can come in and be a situational pass rusher, can make that defensive line, that rotation deeper, much deeper. They need depth. They didn't have depth before, you know, and so now they got that, especially with Nassib coming in. Maybe they kick Clee Farrell inside when he comes in, and all of a sudden you got like a three-headed monster, even a four-headed monster, because you look at a guy like Clee Farrell, like I said, 4.5 sacks his rookie year. He missed time as a rookie. You know, he got a concussion. He lost a lot of weight when they went overseas and played Chicago. And there's so much that Clee can do to improve off of what he did his rookie year, and he still had 4.5 sacks. So you're looking at 10 sacks from Crosby, and just give Carl Nassib, just say, hey, man, he's going to get 5 or 6 sacks. Rotational piece, he'll get 5 or 6 sacks. I say that Clee Farrell will probably get 5 or 6 sacks as well. Maybe even 8. Maybe he'll top out around 8. But anyway, anywhere between like 5 and 8 sacks, he should be out there getting as long as he plays a full season. He looks like he's gained some weight. He's a lot stronger. He's more built this year going into his second year. And now he knows what to expect. And believe me, this dude was a dog at Clemson for a reason. You know, a lot of people think that he's just the guy that's supposed to replace Khalil Mack, and he's not. He was never even drafted to be that guy. He was drafted for a reason. They got exactly what they wanted out of him, a guy who's going to get after it, a guy who's going to bring his lunch pail. He's a blue-collar dude, and he's going to be a leader of the defense as well. That dude has leadership skills, and that goes a long way. Leadership is nothing that you can't manufacture it. I can't force you to be a leader. No coach can tell you, I need you to be a leader. You either got it in you or you don't. You're either a leader or you're not. It's like being a dog. You're either a dog or you're not. I can't teach you to be a dog. Paul Gunther can't teach you to be a dog. You just got to have that natural instinct in you. Malik Collins, very excited about him. He's got 14.5 sacks since he's come into the league in 2016. And he had 4 sacks in 2019. He would have led the defensive tackles for the Raiders in 2019 with sacks. He had 4 for the Cowboys. The leading sack guy from the defensive tackle position for the Raiders was Mo Hurst with 3.5. He's a guy who I feel like has a lot of pressure on him. He's really got to step up and play a lot better than he has so far in his career. He's just got to be more consistent. He's been hot and cold, but there's too many times where he's cold. He's got to be hot all the time. His blood's got to run hot. You know, he's got to have that anger built into him. He can't be that big teddy bear, man. He's got to go and get after it. So Mo Hurst, he's got a lot to prove, but him next to Jonathan Hankins or next to Malik Collins should be a nice duo. And oh, by the way, I'm talking about the defensive line. I'm talking about Nassib. I'm talking about Crosby. I'm talking about Farrell. I'm talking about Collins. I'm talking about Hankins. I'm talking about Hurst. And all of these guys are going to get coached up by Rod Marinelli. He's a guy that John Gruden wanted to have on his roster and on his coaching staff the minute he took over with the Raiders back in 2018. But Dallas Cowboys wouldn't let him go, so he had to wait until there was a new coaching staff, and then they agreed to part ways. So as soon as he was available, then John Gruden went out and got him. John Gruden has won a Super Bowl with Rod Marinelli as his defensive coordinator, so he knows what Rod Marinelli is going to do. He's going to push the hell out of these guys and get the most out of them. Now, Move to the linebacking core. You heard from Nick Wachowski in segment number one. Him and Littleton are going to bring versatility sideline to sideline at the linebacker position, something that Raider Nation has not seen since, like I said before, the law firm of Morrison and Howard. And rest in peace to Thomas Howard. But those guys were dynamic. Those guys were able to pick off the ball. Those guys were able to follow running backs out the backfield. They were able to run with the tight ends. And the Raiders just haven't had that. And there's a lot of talent in the AFC West, particularly from the running back position and the tight end position, that the Raiders have to step up. But now you got Kukowski, you got Littleton, you got Javon White. He's a guy who was a safety in college, so that means he could run with the tight end. He can hang with them. He can drop in coverage. And Tanner Muse is a guy who is just a workhorse, man. He's one of those dudes that's going to get after it. He was at Clemson, and he was a dog at Clemson. And, you know, the thing about it is almost everybody in Raider Nation wanted Isaiah Simmons to be on that Raiders defense. They wanted to find a way for the Raiders to either move up or hope that Isaiah Simmons dropped to him in the draft. Well, you know who helped Isaiah Simmons be Isaiah Simmons? That was Tanner Muse from Clemson. I know a lot of people look at him and be like, I don't know what this guy's going to do. I don't know why they picked him in the third round. This dude is a workhorse. This team, if you look at it, man, it's made up of old school, blue collar, hard hat, bring your lunch pail to work. You know what I mean? Like, those are the kind of cats that the Raiders have on the, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And they got dudes that got a little bit of grit to them, a little bit of nasty to them. They just got a little bit of attitude. So another player that's gonna pay off for the Raiders in a major way, I believe, is going to be Tanner Muse. So you look out for him. Now, he's a rookie, so he's going to start out on special teams, and that's where he's really going to butter his bread. But he will find a way, with his work ethic, he will find a way to get onto the field. And now, how about Trayvon Mullen? Second year in this system. Second year as a starter. You know, he came in, week 9 as a starter, replaced Gerrion Conley, who they moved off to the Houston Texans. Trayvon Mullen's only going to be so much better. He is a guy who, he may get burned on a play or two here or there, but he has a very short memory, which is great for a defensive back, where he's ready to get after it. And he's still going to be true to his technique and still trust his eyes and trust what he's seeing going on and react to it. How Trayvon Mullen takes the next step is make sure he doesn't get penalties called on him. He's got to learn to not get so many penalties called on him, and he's got to learn to take the ball away. You know, there's a few times that he had his hands on the ball and it should have gone the other way, and he wasn't able to do that his rookie year. This year, he's got to secure that ball. He's got to break it up, but he's also got to secure it. So that's expected to see improvement from Trayvon Mullen in his second year as a starter. And now you wonder, okay, well, what's going to happen across from him? Who's going to be the dude across from him? You got Damon Arnette, the first round pick. You got Amik Robertson, who was the fourth round pick. Those guys, I don't expect to see them start immediately, but I do expect to see Prince Amakamura out there. You know, he was a veteran that was brought in, and along with Demaryius Randall, that's going to allow the rookies to adjust to the NFL. Those two guys will allow Damon Arnette to adjust. It'll allow Amik Robertson to adjust. And it'll allow Jonathan Abram possibly to make rookie mistakes, because as far as I'm concerned, you're almost looking at another rookie in Jonathan Abram. He only played one game. He played that very first game against Denver. You saw a glimpse of what he can do. He was flying around the field. He was a missile. He was laying the wood. But unfortunately, he hurt himself. So hopefully he learned from that. Hopefully now he's going to understand how to keep himself healthy and also play the game the way he knows how to play the game. So you look at Arnette, Robertson, and Jonathan Abram. Those are three young dudes in the secondary that can all make big strides. I don't expect it to happen right away, but you can expect to see them make some plays and make some moves later on in the season as they start getting familiar with the NFL game. Trayvon Mullen did it, I think week 9 is when he became the starter. So maybe you'll see them a little bit earlier, maybe you'll see them a little bit later, but at some point when the coaching staff feels like they're ready to take that next step, that's when you'll see them. Damon Arnette, Amik Robertson, Jonathan Abram, he's going to start, obviously, next to Demaryius Randall, but he's going to make a few mistakes. Just prepare for that, because he wasn't allowed to do that his rookie year after only playing one game. So with all that being said, where do you see the Raiders not being a better defense? I mean, there's dudes everywhere. There could be better dudes. You know, I was all on board going and getting Jamal Adams. I think he would have been a game changer on that defensive side of the ball, but Seattle pulled the trigger on him and gave up a lot for it. So I'm okay with him going to Seattle, but Jadeveon Clowney's still out there. You know, you want to make a move, you want to add some depth to your defensive line, go ahead and go and get Jadeveon Clowney. That would be a nice addition, but it's not a must. They have enough talent where they can get out there and get it and make it happen. And I really do believe this defense could be top 15. It doesn't have to be top 5. It doesn't have to be top 3, but they have to find a way to become middle of the pack. If the offense is expected to be what they are expected to be, which is a really good offense with a lot of guys coming back and then some new weapons for Derek Carr and company, then this defense, to complement them, needs to at least come in around 15 and obviously give up less than 26 points a game. If you can cut that down to 21 points a game, 22 points a game, even 23 points a game, and then the offense score more than 19 points a game, you're cooking with grease. You're going from 7 wins to 9 wins to 10 wins to possibly 11 wins in a playoff berth. I mean, there's so many opportunities there in front of you. But with the dogs and the dudes that I just talked about, those guys can make it happen. Those guys are all viable pieces. I don't see a weak link there. I didn't mention Arden Key because I feel like if you get anything from Arden Key, that's just a bonus. You know, so I didn't mention him at all because I'm not expecting him to be a factor. But the guys I mentioned, I expect all those dudes to be players for that Raiders defense. And so if they can do that, there's no way in God's green earth that they're ranked 29th in the league and give up 26 points a game. I just don't see it. There's no reason Paul Gunther and Rob Marinelli working together cannot make that defense a top 15. They run the same kind of scheme they always have. It's a Mike Zimmer-type defense. Gunther is a natural linebacker coach at heart, and Marinelli is a natural defensive line coach at heart. So those two guys should be able to blend really well, not one trying to, you know, overrule the other or be the boss of the other. Those two guys working together should be able to get every guy that I just mentioned to be on the same page and, like I said, cooking with grease. So what's your thoughts on that? Would love to hear from you, 707-654-4693. I know it went a little long in that segment, but I'll still get some calls and texts coming up next in segment number 3 of today's Locked On Raiders podcast.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Here we go, Raider Nation. Segment number 3 of today's Locked On Raiders podcast. I went a little long in segment number 2, so not going to be able to get to as many calls and texts as I'd like to, but still going to get to some, you know. So we're going to go ahead and knock that out right now. The number 707-654-4693. Again, 707-654-4693. First text up is from Andrew out the 812. AQ, it's Andrew out the 812 again. Got something on my mind I need to talk about. How did Max Crosby not get Defensive Rookie of the Year over Nick Bosa? Let me throw some stats at you to back up my point. Sacks, Max Crosby 10, Nick Bosa 9. Tackle for loss, Max Crosby 19, Nick Bosa 17. Passes defense, Max Crosby 4, Nick Bosa 2. Forced fumbles, Max Crosby 4, Nick Bosa 1. Fumble recovery, Max had 0, Nick Bosa had 2. So with those stats, I don't see how Nick got Defensive Rookie of the Year. Anyway, Raider Nation, I'm out. That's from Andrew out the 812. And Andrew, thank you for that text. And it's real, real simple why Max Crosby did not win Defensive Rookie of the Year. It comes down to one word: wins. The Raiders did not win enough games. The 49ers went to the Super Bowl. Now, they lost the Super Bowl, but they went to the Super Bowl, meaning Nick Bosa was seen and showcased a lot more in the public eye than Max Crosby was. Max Crosby, we as Raider fans all know what he was able to do and didn't even play the whole season. He is a guy that was very deserving of Defensive Rookie of the Year, as Josh Jacobs was deserving of Offensive Rookie of the Year. But ultimately, the Raiders didn't win enough games. If the Raiders had gone to the playoffs, if the Raiders had made a deep push, Max Crosby probably would have got that. But ultimately, they saw the disruptiveness that Nick Bosa caused. They saw him making some plays. They saw him out there all the time, you know, on primetime games. And, well, it went to him. And it didn't go to the guy who was wearing the silver and black that a lot of people didn't see outside of Raider fans. So not to, you know, harp on it too much, but ultimately, when you win games in the league, that's when you get a lot of recognition. And that goes back to what Derek Carr was saying about being disrespected. I'm tired of being disrespected. He wasn't just talking about himself. I'm glad you brought that up, actually. That backs up my point of what I said the other day. It's not just about him. He was talking about Darren Waller being number 99 on the top 100 list. He was talking about Josh Jacobs not winning Offensive Rookie of the Year. He was talking about Rodney Hudson not being on the top 100. Max Crosby not being on the top 100. You know what I mean? He was talking about everybody, not just him. And it's funny, that conversation and him saying that and him defending his players sparked such a long conversation about Derek Carr. And I'll tell you, Raider Nation, I get so tired of the back and forth, the circle of conversation around Derek Carr, because it never ends. Like I said, it's like a circle. It never ends. There's always going to be someone who's got something to defend him about, and there's always going to be someone who's got something to shoot him down about. And it's so funny. I'm always asked questions about him, so I got to speak on it. But, man, I'll tell you what. If I were to go a week without ever talking about Derek Carr, I'd be okay with that. I really would, because, man, oh, man, that's that conversation. That's like the gift that keeps on giving. You know what I'm saying? It's like herpes. You can never get away from it. I mean, I know that that's not a good analogy, but it's serious. You can never, never shake it. It's always there. Even when it looks like it's gone, it's always lurking in the background. It's always going to be a factor, if you know what I mean. So thank you for that text. I appreciate you. I didn't mean to go on to the Derek Carr conversation. I did that on my own, but that's just how it is. See, lurking in the background. Anyway, thank you so much for that. Next up is a call from Raider Loke in the 626 calling to talk about the offensive side of the ball and a player that is not being looked at or talked about at all. Here he is, Raider Loke in the 626.
What is up, Q and the rest of Raider Nation? This is Raider Loke from the 626 and Q. I know last week I responded to your training camp defensive battles, and I kind of gave you my opinion on the DBs, safeties, the linebackers, the front line, et cetera. So this time I want to kind of talk about the offense side of the ball, and we already know Derek Carr is going to be the starter of the quarterback, Josh Jacobs as running back, and tight end with Darren Waller. But I really wanted to talk about the wide receiver group and the we're really talking about this player, and not this player that specifically that I'm kind of hoping for the best isn't really being spoken on a lot, and that is wide receiver Say Jones. You know, I believe, in my opinion, he's going to be the breakout player of the year. With the he was one of the first players to be putting in that work with DC in Vegas. You know, he's been putting in that work, and we traded for him last season. And just like with Trevor Davis, same thing, we traded for him and we let him go during the season. But there's a reason why Say Jones is still on this team. You know, he's really putting in that work, and I believe this is his contract year. He's going in his fourth year. He was drafted in 2017. And I think he's got something to prove. You know, I believe a change of scenery is something that always excels in a player's career. And his father, you know, three-time Super Bowl champ, linebacker with the Cowboys, he left a legacy for him, and it's football's in his DNA. His pops is a linebacker. His one of his uncles was a quarterback with the Bengals, so he's really got that NFL DNA in him. And I believe he wants to continue his father's legacy and start something with Derek Carr and the Raiders in Vegas. You know, so that's my breakout player of the year. I believe he's not being spoken on a lot, and I believe he should. And I get it. You know, he hasn't done much in the NFL, but coming out of college, you know, the Bills traded up to get him in the second round. He was projected to be a late first round, early second rounder. He come from a small school, East Carolina. And, you know, he was an NCAA all-time reception leader for a reason. So I believe he's really trying to prove to the NFL and to that he was worthy of the early second round pick. And news broke yesterday that Greg Olsen saying that Henry Ruggs is going to start at the slot. And everyone's asking, where does that put Renfro at? Well, Keon, I'm going to revert back to what you've always spoken on in your podcast where you say Renfro is a quality over quantity kind of guy. And I believe he's going to come in and third down in red zone situations just to, like you said, third in Renfro and red zone. I believe that's where he'll be. And then on X and Z, my prediction will be Ty Will on the other side and then Zay Jones on the other side with Henry Ruggs at slot. And then I believe Nelson Aguilar and Brian Edwards. You got Brian Edwards behind one of the wide receivers, and I believe Nelson Aguilar, another first-round pick that came from the Eagles. And like I say, team to center is always good.
Raider Loke in the 626, appreciate you, man. It's always good to hear from you. And, yeah, Zay Jones is a guy that's not being talked about at all, but there's a reason for that. There's a lot of talent on the wide receiver side of the ball, a lot of talent offensively, and I just don't know if there's room for him. It's similar to what I've said before about other wide receivers, that it may just come down to a numbers game. You know, if Nelson Aguilar is there because of special teams and, you know, he'll go out there and be a receiver as well, you know, is there room for a Zay Jones? You know, is there room for a Rico Gafford? I think Rico Gafford's going to be a numbers game, and Zay Jones very well could be as well. I just don't see it. He hasn't done a whole lot in the league. You know, and I know it's not a great answer and a way to back up the hardworking, you know, dude, but I just think that ultimately he probably will be a victim of the numbers game and he won't really do anything with the silver and black this year. But I could be wrong. And if I am, hey, man, I have no problem coming on the show and saying, hey, I was wrong. Zay Jones has become a factor. And I appreciate you calling in on Raider Nation Radio 920 as well on Monday to talk about Zay Jones. So definitely appreciate that two times. Next up is a text from Andrew to Raider. Hey, Q, been a minute since I chimed in. I want to respond to a thought that a caller had on Monday's episode when he was confused about the move to line up Ruggs in the slot. I have two thoughts, as a matter of fact. One, Gruden wanted to go and get himself his own version of Tyreek Hill, so he drafted Ruggs. Well, this is Gruden deploying Ruggs like a Tyreek Hill. In 2018, Hill led all receivers in yards and touchdowns from the slot. Nation, y'all can fact check me if you want to. Hill does a lot of damage out the slot, but is not exclusively a slot wide receiver. I imagine it's going to be the same way with Ruggs. And point number two, This is not wasting talent. It actually opens up more opportunity for young stud wideout and Bryan Edwards. This also allows packages for Williams and Edwards to line up outside, with Ruggs and Waller playing closer inside. Renfro will get his snaps, and there'll be plenty of packages where he's at the slot, I would bet. But I actually think this is a good coaching move to set Ruggs up for success while also giving our offense an ability to be versatile. Thanks, Q. This is from Andrew the Raider. And you know, that's a good point. And I'll tell you, I'm not going to lie, as many people are kind of confused by Greg Olsen saying Henry Ruggs is going to line up in the slot, I think he's going to line up all over the field. But I just don't want to limit Renfro because he may not be as fast or as athletic. I think that he could still be a very dynamic force. So my thing is, find a way to get him onto the field. So you got to put Ruggs where you feel like you could use him best. And you're right about Tyreek Hill. He was an absolute monster out of the slot and did some great things. And John Gruden does want to have his own version of Tyreek Hill, and that very well could be Ruggs. But I just want to see the best football players on the field at the same time. And I think Renfro gives Derek Carr a nice security blanket. Obviously, tight ends always do that. But Hunter Renfro is a guy that I feel like has just got a knack for sitting down in the zone and making himself available, showing the numbers to Derek Carr, and he can hit them and extend drives and get those big, you know, third and Renfros that everyone likes to say. The quality catches, not the quantity of catches. So that's kind of where I was coming from. I totally understand where you're coming from, and I think you're spot on. And the one thing I know about John Gruden, he wants to have all his guys versatile where he can line them up anywhere, and they could do a lot of different things. So thank you so much for that. Appreciate hearing from you. And I got time for one more call, and we'll take that call from Raider Miles in the Mile High. He's calling to make a statement, a bold statement that has to do with the offense, a really big statement about the offense. Here he is, Raider Miles in the Mile High.
Hey, what up, Q, man? This is Raider Miles from the Mile High. Been listening to a lot of new booties, which is dope. Plus, man, I'm proud of you, man. You're working hard. You're getting stuff coming your way, and that's great. That's how it should be. And keep promoting what you do. Keep promoting yourself. This is great. But I'm calling in, man, to make a bold prediction, man. It's been on my mind since June, and I'm pretty confident about it now. Before that, though, remember, I was the first one, at least on the podcast, to tell you Henry Ruggs. He was my new favorite, and that's who I wanted us to get. So just letting you know, that was back when you liked Jerry Jeudy, even before you switched to CeeDee Lamb. But let me ask you this. Do you think Josh Jacobs could get 125 yards a game? I think he's going to have like a big game or a couple big games, pushing 200, maybe lows, maybe around 80, 90. But I think he could average about 125. Now, there's a big if he stays healthy all year. Now, do you think he can or do you think he will? I'm asking you that. Now, Gruden is supposed to be upset that, you know, that Jacobs didn't win the Rookie of the Year, so he wants to make a point. And then plus with Ruggs, you know, affecting a number of the men at the line, plus Edwards and Williams as well, I trust Carr enough to dare you to, you know, to bring anybody up or bring everybody up. So I'm calling it, man. JJ2K, Josh Jacobs, 2,000 yards rushing. DC will still have over 70% completion, and he still won't get the complete respect that he deserves, but JJ2K, Raider Nation, I'm out.
Raider Miles, it's good to hear from you again. And I remember 100% you saying Henry Ruggs was your guy. And that was I wasn't confident in that at that point. Didn't know he was going to be the guy. I actually thought at first Jerry Jeudy was going to be the guy. Then after a little bit of further thinking about it, I thought it was going to be the young man CeeDee Lamb, who's now in Dallas. And I was wrong on both of those. It ended up being Henry Ruggs, but I see what the Raiders are doing. I'm pretty excited about it. Now, as far as Josh Jacobs go, averaging 125 a game, I don't think he's going to average 125 yards per game rushing. He may average 125 yards from scrimmage. I just don't see 125 yards on the ground. I think it's too much of a passing league to do that. But I honestly believe that running backs in general, like really good running backs in general, should average about 100 yards per game. And I think that the Raiders, if they want to be at their best success, have their highest success rate, they need to have a running back get around 100 yards per game. That's always the number that I'm looking for. That's always the number that I'm shooting for a running back to get, about 100 yards. If you have 100 yards of offense from your running back, unless he had a couple really big runs, you've probably owned the time of possession on the clock. And I can know against certain teams like Kansas City and Baltimore and other teams like that that have really dynamic offenses, the Saints, you know, that might not matter because they can strike quick, fast, and in a hurry. But for the most part, if you have a 100-yard rusher per game, you give him 20, 22 carries, and he gets 100 yards per game, that's a win. That recipe is a dub for me every time. So I don't know if Josh Jacobs will get 125 yards a game on the ground, but if John Gruden is to his word and says that they're going to get him more involved in the passing game like they did say, he very well could average 125 yards of scrimmage, maybe 75 yards, maybe 80 yards on the ground, and then the rest through the air. Something like what Christian McCaffrey does in Carolina. That's very possible because Josh Jacobs is a dude, and he can get that done. And I saw him catch the ball a lot in Alabama, and the Raiders need to implement that into the offense. Now, I'll say if that happens, what's everybody going to say? What's everybody going to come on the podcast and say? Only thing Derek Carr does is check down. So you pick your poison. You know what I mean? Pick your poison, what you want. Do you want him to, you know, to throw the ball to the running back, or do you want him to chuck it down the field all the time? I mean, it's like you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of questions around there, but I do think that Josh Jacobs is in for a big year. I really do. Hopefully he stays healthy for all 16 games, and I could easily see him getting 1,600 yards on the ground, no doubt about it, and maybe another 400, 500 yards through the air. But we'll see what the game plan says. I mean, there's a lot more weapons and there's only one ball, so we'll see what happens. But I still think no matter what your weapons are on the field, the offense still goes through number 28, and that's Josh Jacobs. So thank you so much for that. That's all I really got time for. I got a text from Rob from Oregon, a call from Brother Marquise in the 305, and a couple more that I'd like to get to. I'll get to that on Wednesday's show. Just want to appreciate everybody for the support of the show, support of the podcast always. Raider Nation Radio 920. We're doing our thing. Scott Goldbranson and myself, Silver and Black Today, from 2 to 4 p.m. West Coast time. Definitely appreciate everyone who calls into that show as well and represents. Hold it down, Raider Nation. We appreciate you, and we'll be back on Wednesday. Until then, Raider Nation, stay safe. Wash your hands. You know, wear your mask. Do what you got to do. Social distance. Take care of your family. And as always, just win, baby.